Welcome and thank you for being here. We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Is there anyone who would prefer to give it or to lead it?
I'll lead it.
Principal Staley?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And now, let's review and approve the minutes from February 8, 2023. I'll call for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Great. Motion carries. Thank you. Wonderful. We're going to have the Utah legislators providing updates on the legislative session right now. It's 20 to 25 minutes total, so 4 to 5 minutes each.
We just added that as an option. If there were any here that we've heard this month, next month they'll all be correctly here. Invited to be here.
Okay, so no one's here for that this time, so we'll move on to agenda item 5, the biomass grant application. And Brian, we're going to give you 5 minutes on this one.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. So the last month, the board did ask for a small group of us to vet the biomass. We did look into that in really deep detail. We learned that Rural Development Department of Agriculture, the whole state of Utah only receives for grant funding $100,000, and so as we got more into this, we just said we're not going to do it. And so that's what I want to report back to the steering committee, is that we did run it up the flagpole.
Yeah, I feel like we vetted that as well as we could at that time, and if things change in the future, great. You know, it's always great to work with Virgin. Next item, 5 County Regional Area Sector Analysis and 5 County SEDS. Looks like Don and Marion are going to be giving us
here
a full 30 minutes.
All right. So should I just tell you something?
Let me get this shared screen share.
I'm trying to learn. Oh, thank you.
All right, so it's good to be here. My name is Don Albrecht. I'm director of the Western Rural Development Center up at Utah State. Over the years, we've had the privilege of working with many of you as we've done the ASAP Area Sector Analysis Project in all of the counties in the 5 County region. We've also done all of the counties in all of southern Utah, actually. We almost got through this thing before we got stuck with COVID, but then we got out and worked some more with Garfield County. So my colleague, Marion Bentley, and I are going to report this. If we could go to the next slide. So just a bit of a background for those of you who aren't familiar with this process. The ASAP program is developed in coordination with a bunch of universities from around the West. My job is I help coordinate rural economic development in 13 states around the West. So we've worked in, we've done ASAP in over 50 counties around the West, from Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, New Mexico, and like we said, all of southern Utah, with help of our partners from around the country. Okay, so the way this process works, and this will be a review for some of you, but we start up in the upper left hand corner where it says community profile. So when we work in a community, in each of the counties here, we determine what the community's goals are. It's not Marion and I's job to go in there and tell you what you want to be when you grow up. It's the people that, that live there. The way we do this is we work with the community and do a survey and have their residents tell us what they want to be when they grow up. We also do an asset inventory, and this is, we find out where there's 41 assets we take a look at. These include things like transportation. Are you on the interstate? Do you have airport? What are the job skills of the workforce? How good is the internet? How much space do you have for different kinds of manufacturing and that type of stuff? So we give the goals of the community, what assets and infrastructure they have, and then we, with the ASAP team, have conducted surveys with about 2,600 people down here on the with different industries and businesses from around the country. When we interview the businesses, we do the kind of the mirror image of what we get from the community. So we look at what benefits and costs they bring to the community, what kind of wages they pay, do they hire locally, what kind of skills they need, and then what the business needs. Do they need to be near an airport? Do they need to be on an interstate highway? Do they need high quality internet? Do they need a skilled workforce? All of these kinds of things. And then what we do is we take all of this information, we put it in our fancy community, run a matching process, which is not very much dissimilar to eHarmony.com or something like that. What we're doing is matching industries with communities. And from this, we help the community target certain industries in the short term. We help the communities look at, in the long term, what kind of assets and infrastructure they may want to improve so that they're better in position better for certain kinds of industries that they may want. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. Now, in conducting ASAP, we have some primary data, like I said, there's the surveys that we've conducted with businesses and community members and the assets we've collected. We also put a whole bunch of secondary data in there. It's kind of based on implant. We put a bunch of census data in there. We have FBI data. We've got crime statistics in there, so we know what the crime rate of different communities are, and cost of housing, and in a whole EPA, we've got pollution levels, and we've got all of this information which we put in the model as well. So let's go to the next one. Okay, so in the five counties here, we conducted ASAP in each of the five counties. We've worked with each of the counties individually. We've given them each a summary report on what would work for their county. What we're going to do today is we took all of the five counties together, we put it in the model, and so we've run a regional model. But the idea that a lot of things make sense if you work together cooperatively. You know, that if the more urban counties in the area partner with rural counties, they have some things that you need, you have some things that... Anyway, together you're in a better position to make sense out of this kind of thing. And so, what we've done today is we've got all of the five counties together, and then we took the survey results and the results for the three rural counties out and looked at them separately. So Beaver, Garfield, and Kane we look at separately, and then we put all five of them together. And in the end, we'll send you to Brian, and Brian can share it with everybody, this PowerPoint presentation. And then we're going to send, a pretty fat report that send it to Brian, and he can send it electronically to everybody as well, which we'll have a lot more detail when we have time to look at today. So like I said, we've got 624 survey respondents for the five counties combined. In the three counties of King, Beaver, and Garfield, we've got 247 surveys. Okay. Now I'm going to turn it over to Marion to go through the details of this, and then when he gets through, I'm going to put up some results. We worked with Brian in five county cooperatively in doing a last fall we did this. We worked with Qualtrics and we did a survey of all of southern Utah, and I'll show you some, I think some pretty interesting results of that. So let Marion talk about this, and then I will come back and talk about the survey results.
So this slide represents, as Don mentioned, the results from all five counties from those 524 surveys. The participants were asked questions that related to economic quality, social quality, and environmental quality of development. And they responded to those sort of forced choice kinds of questions. And from all five counties, you can see that economic quality had the highest percentage, followed by environmental and followed by social quality. So for the next slide, for the rural counties, pretty much the same. It looks like a little higher percentage of environmental quality from social quality, but economic quality and the quality of their economic activities and opportunities have the highest percentage of interest and response in all five counties. So next slide, we'll show this in a little different way. This is now all five counties. These are the 15 questions we asked on. These are the 15 questions we asked on the left.
I'll get you back. I'm just trying to make it a little bit larger, but I can't. That's big.
You can make it faster.
Moving right along.
So these are the 15 questions on the left, and the responses you can see on the right. Again, the top two questions, the responses were new business increased the average local wage, and new businesses higher local wage.
That was the top two? The top two bars up there?
Right.
And the red are economic, and green are environmental, and the blue are social.
Now, this is all five counties combined.
All five counties combined.
Increase the wire.
So, and just thinking about this, it's probably doing it this way. We combine all the data for five counties and then broken out the three counties, the three rural counties. We probably should have shown you the two metro counties separate from the combined five counties to see what that more significant difference would be. And we could do that if that's of interest to Brian or to any of you. We can get you that data as well. For the rural counties, again, you can see the environmental responses and the are in green, and the economic development responses or the economic responses are in red. The blue is social.
Can you read those questions from the top three? Yeah.
New businesses do not pollute the water. New businesses do not release toxic chemicals in the air. New businesses are in compliance with hazardous waste.
Okay. And read on down.
Read on, and the following questions for the economic. The economic issues are: new business increase the average local wage. That was the 9.3%. New businesses hire locally. New businesses return profits to the community. Every new job generates additional jobs in the community. And then the social indicator, 6.4, new jobs offer benefits. An environmental issue, new businesses do not emit greenhouse gases. An economic issue, new businesses hire locally. Socially, new jobs are full-time. Environmental, new businesses do not develop undeveloped land, and then the last three are social. New businesses support community activities. New businesses increase the local tax base, and new jobs provide training programs. Next slide.
And we will get all of it so you can look at it bigger so you can see.
Don mentioned that the community asset inventory, which we compile for each county, contains 41 aspects of the command of the county's ability to operate. From our perspective, we're getting better. To operate their community assets in such a way that they become attractive to any external investigator. So this is like building space, retail, industrial, manufacturing office, develop and undeveloped land, availability of infrastructure and services, access to all types of transportation, water, sewer, business, and social indicators, which include workforce, education, wages, etc. So we thought of compiling all of the five counties' assets. That makes it a little bit unwieldy. So we didn't do that. But I don't know what that would show us, other than you've got a lot of assets in the five-county area. But for each county, we do have that compiled, and they have that information. And really, that kind of information is useful, if they haven't got that collected already, as a useful tool for them. So the next slide. So the data we're going to show you is reported at the four-digit level of the NAICS code. You can sort of review down at the bottom part of this slide. You've got an example, ag sector. The two-digit level is the industry sector. The three-digit level is the industry subsector. Four-digit level is the industry group. That's where we're reporting. The five-digit level is the industry, and the six-digit level is the actual business application. So the data that we report to the communities is at the four-digit level, but in developing that data and in targeting industries, we identify five and six-digit NAICS code specific levels. So we plot out the results on a graph sort of like this. This is just really shown for our use to sort of see what we do. Again, compatibility is an industry's ability to do business in a particular county, and desirability is the community's goals and objectives are met by a particular industry. So we're interested in we compiled an index for these two values, compatibility and desirability. So in our little graph here, compatibility is on the vertical axis, desirability on the horizontal axis, and we have sort of arbitrarily established a 0.5 level of a perfect match, of a match. We're most interested in what's happening on the right side of this graph. And what we'll show you are the high BICI, high desirability index, high compatibility index results for Fayette County. But we're also interested in those opportunities where the industries are still desirable, but we may not be compatible because they don't have the assets or the resources. But everything that we'll see today is in that upper right-hand quadrant. So this is for five counties. And we have just taken a sample of like the highest, maybe 6%. Let me just kind of walk through what this slide is telling us. On the left-hand side, we've got the NAICS code, the four-digit NAICS code, its description, whether it exists already in the county, its desirability index score, and its compatibility index score, and this is for all five counties. You can see we have a lot, and if we would have plotted that out for you, it would have been a big mass of dots. One of the benefits of doing this kind of analysis is that we can separate those industries that already exist in our communities from those that don't, but we might be interested in attracting. But you can see for five counties, we can select among a number of highly desirable and highly compatible industries. Let me just show you or tell you what, from the data that we've aggregated, the counties then have to decide how they're going to narrow the number down from maybe 50 highly desirable compatible industries to maybe 7 or 8. Each county does that. Total, I think we counted from our final report we'll send to Brian, 48 target industries from all five counties.
Excuse me, Marion.
I just pulled out some of the. Yes.
Are the X's indicating that they do exist or they don't exist?
They do exist. These are existing. If they did not exist, there would be a blank space.
Thank you.
So these are existing industries in the five county region.
As a group.
As a group. And here are some of the targets from the metro communities. Just hold the metro communities, even though this shows all five counties. Pharmaceutical and medical manufacturing, computer systems design, scientific research and development services, plastics product manufacturing, aerospace product and parts. All of these were represented in desirable, compatible industries, but we have to pull them out of this this unworkable mass of maybe 100, or in some cases probably fewer, but we have a lot of possible hits just because of where we are and the assets and the resources we have. So that's the whole five counties. For the rural three counties, again, you can see the same layout, and all of these except for audio and video equipment manufacturing were present in those three counties. A lot of these same industries are represented as from the larger picture of five counties, but again, what we have to do is go to work on this and find the seven or eight industries in Beaver County or in Kane County or in Garfield County that will work for us, and that's the job of the steering committees that we worked with. Here are some of the target industries that came out of the three-county analysis. Dairy food, dairy product manufacturing, pesticide fertilizer, animal food manufacturing, internet-based sectors, scenic and retreat, recreation sector, restaurants and accommodation sectors. So the focus is a little different in the rural counties than it was in the two metro counties. Okay, next slide. We've got another way to look at this. This is, again, all five counties. The left-hand side, you can see the sectors by rate of appearance in the high CIDI list. Okay, two-digit sectors. 6% of all NACE codes that deal with agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting are found in the CIDI list of the five county area. 60% of all mining NACE codes. So look down here, we've got 100% of all of the professional, scientific, and technical service NACE codes are represented in those two counties. All five counties, but primarily the two counties. Same with management of companies and enterprises. You can see some of the ones where we have a high concentration. Information is another one. Wholesale trade is another one.
How do you explain 0% of accommodation and food services when that's all we do?
I know. There's got to be a glitch somewhere.
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
I think... Nobody comes to our place if we don't give them a house and food.
Yeah, but it's desirability.
That was the weird thing. We're totally undesirable in Washington County.
No, it's whether or not the community desires it. It's whether or not the community desires it.
Right.
That's probably
so
vague explanation.
Is what did the residents
they all work there?
Zero
people think it's desirable.
I think another thing is
it's the community like architects either.
We want all the government to go away. What we found all over the place is that the whole tourism sectors, they aren't defined very well in the NAICS codes. It's spread out over too many NAICS codes, and so it gets
watered down.
It gets watered down, and so you kind of have to combine some of those to make it work,
and
all the tourism things.
And in a place like Washington Iron Counties, again, the focus is on something other than accommodation and and tourism services, even though that's still the most important part of our business.
And again, all of the responses came from people that you asked, the 274?
This is from the 624.
Yeah.
624?
So,
because some of that seems like all the responses came out of best friends. But go ahead. I'm not criticizing. I'm just trying to figure it out.
You know, one that kind of, I think, is an example that shows how this works. We were working in Paiute County. Paiute County has nothing going on in agriculture. Kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. But when we was working in that county alone, it came out as totally undesirable, even though that's all they had. But then we looked deeper, and the residents of Paiute County wanted industries that pay better than the existing industries, and agriculture doesn't pay better, and so it came out as non-desirable. And I think part of what's going on here is the residents want industries that pay well, and these don't, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So, but that would be something for us to look at, and we would look at that and say, how do we explain that? And let's talk about that. So for the rural counties, we can look at the same. You can see that ag is represented at a higher level, so is mining. Construction has a higher percentage represented in just the rural areas. Again, some of the same concentration of information, professional, scientific. And I think, and you can see accommodation, I actually get some points.
Some love there.
So, you know, one of the things that makes me think about a study like this is you take an area, a region like Pike County, and they're so disparate in some ways. How can you integrate that region economically? And how can you help, or it's not really helping the rural counties, it's really developing a system and maybe a supplier kind of mentality where there are activities and there are economic kinds of opportunities in the three rural counties that help to supply wherever the jobs and wherever the opportunities are in the five counties, but very often that would be in Iron and Washington counties. And I think maybe there's a basis for some discussion out of something like this, how we can help make that work, or how we can develop more of a system from what we have. Yeah, Brian?
So are you able to capture what comes to my mind is remote work? Like, having gone through the pandemic, many people left the big cities and wanted to come.
Yeah, so if you look, can we back up just for a little bit more? Another one. This is the, but the, anything with a five, starts with a five, is computer based and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And they showed up a lot.
Okay.
In these, and so, yeah. Okay, we can go back.
Yeah.
Okay, so like I mentioned, last fall, Brian and I worked together. We wrote a survey instrument, which we then hired Qualtrics to do a representative sample of all 15 counties in southern Utah to get an idea of what they want. So, one of the questions we ask is, this community is a great place to live. If you look at this, you can see that we're up in the 80% of the residents of all the communities in southern Utah either strongly agree or somewhat agree that their community is a great place to live. There's not a whole lot of really unsatisfied.
But we need to find them. That's our affordable housing right there. Get them to leave.
Okay, we'll give you the assignment of...
we're going to find them.
Yeah,
door to door.
And, okay, so Next slide.
Wait, go back. I sent the picture.
And we will send this.
And we'll send it out too.
Okay.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's pretty impressive. Any type of change would attract the quality of life in this community. So about half of them said any kind of change would detract, but other, you know, it could be a great place to live, but you're still open to improvements and change and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, half are on the other side. And we'll see when we get to the next question. Okay, next one. All right. This community would benefit from improved economic opportunities. We're well into the 80% of people who agree that there is room for improvement with economic opportunities in the community. And so with the work that we're involved in and you guys are involved in, if you know, they might say, we don't want anything to change, but actually they do. They want better jobs. They want jobs that pay better, that type of thing. We can see it. You know, there's things they don't want to change, but they do want better jobs. Okay? Not surprising. Next question. And also, this community would benefit from improved schools. Again, you know, the vast majority of people are okay with changes that make the schools better, that type of stuff. So, again, you know, they like the place, but there's room for improvement. We can make changes there. Okay, so GoGo Utah has established some target industries, and this is the percent of respondents who either strongly or somewhat support development in these kinds of industries. And we got advanced manufacturing, aerospace, financial services, life sciences, software and IT, and agriculture. And as you can see, all of these, you know, if we could get development in any of these sectors that are on Go Utah's target list, people are going to be okay with those kinds of industries. Which, going back to ASAP, I think one of the things that come out of the whole process, you know, there's a lot of potential targets out there, a lot of things that are both desirable and compatible in our communities. So one thing we always tell people is you're not desperate. You don't have to go out there and grab anything that's willing to come. There's a lot of industries that the residents don't want. You know, they don't bring the type of change or the type of economic movement that they want to see. So keep that in mind as we go forward. All right, we got about, there's Mary and Lee's contact information. Like I said, we're going to send the report that has all of each of the five counties in it. The slides, we'll send those, and then a bunch of information that you can spend some time and go through it, say, carefully. Each of the five counties, we worked with them, we helped them narrow it down to three or four target sectors. I think there's lots of information here for as a larger region to look at this information and talk about how you can work together, and especially, you know, when you put the Go Utah things on top of that. But yeah, then any questions?
Ag was on the end. It was actually the third highest.
Yes.
Not by a lot. Neither of them had a lot of margin. Were they talking about ag, like processing or growing?
I think, Brian, I think Go Utah just says agriculture broadly. Don't they?
Right. It's broad.
Okay.
My guess on that, being an ag guy, was that boy, would sure like to see more of it back. You know what I mean? We've lost so much of it, so anybody, a community is usually benefited when agriculture is going on around it. So they're like, we would still like it, but we don't have any place to do it now.
Mm-hmm. All of these,
hard to water.
You know, when we're working with each of the counties individually, I can't remember where we were driving into one town, and it was June, and the sprinklers were going, and the alfalfa. I thought, man, this is But and people don't want to lose that aspect, this agriculture feeling of the communities.
Right into Cache Valley.
Oh yeah, we killed it.
Yeah.
So yes,
I mean, the other component I thought of up there. Did you have a tourism category as in any of the list there of the X scale and
of the on the survey things? The Go Utah hasn't identified tourism as one of their targets because it wasn't one of the highly emphasized targets. So we just went off of their targets.
Well, St. George just recently their financial guru announced that 27% of their entire budget comes from tourism.
Yeah. I'm guessing if you went to Kane or Garfield County, it would be a whole lot more than that.
I agree. So I'm just wondering why, as a component, because food and accommodation is 27%. So if you're taking a survey of what people want, they don't want any more marathons, they don't want any bike races, they don't want anybody coming through their town and doing anything. They just want to be able to, you know what I mean? And they don't want any disruption, but then again, they want services to which $1 out of $4 is coming from somebody who's visiting them.
Yep.
Chair, I think Jared Taylor had a question. He had his hand up on the Zoom, so.
Oh, okay. Commissioner Taylor?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about agriculture in the Pike County region. Basically, how important is it? Because there's a push right now in Kane and Garfield County on the Grand Staircase to eliminate grazing. What does that do to our communities in Kane and Garfield? But how does that also affect the other three counties?
We don't count the other three.
I don't know the answer of what. And hello, Commissioner, how you doing?
Good.
I don't have the numbers of overall off the top of my head how important agriculture is to the five county region. I think what we've learned is that people are concerned about losing it, you know, and want to retain that, but I wish I had specific numbers to answer Commissioner's question, but I don't.
I just saw 86 point something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how many want it, you know, that agree with. Yeah. Great.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of our time on that one. Are there any last questions about it?
Thank you. Crunch a lot of numbers, you two. I didn't picture you.
We got a lot more numbers we can give you if you want.
We're trying to pull our punches.
But it's hard to determine between what someone wants. Everyone wants agriculture. But who is willing to go out and actually
hold
the field and weed it and pick the fruit and prune the trees? I mean, that's the deal, is we're dealing with people that want something or people that are willing to do it. And so that's there's a disconnect.
Yes, that's a very good point. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, that's good. So I grew up on a farm, Rise One, that was moving the sprinklers and milking the cows, and that's why I left. That's why I went to college.
It's a hard, thankless job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good job.
You got to remember Don's from Wayne County, and they belong to the 6th County.
Moving on then to agenda item 7, Community Development Block Grant Program, and that's going to be a 5-minute presentation from Cody.
Hi. It's this time of year again to do the CDBG ranking. So in your packet, there's a list of the applicants this year. We have three. Beaver City had an application for city center and ADA improvements. The Cedar City Housing Authority with property acquisition, and the Town of Tropic with park improvements. This year's funding allocation was a little bit more than we usually get. It was about $200,000 more. So we were actually able to fund all three projects fully this year.
This is a non-prioritized list right now that you're seeing right now. They're alphabetically listed.
Yeah.
We did go through the rating and ranking process that was adopted by this board here every August that gets adopted, and we run the projects through that to see what their relative score is and put them in ranking of project number 1, 2, 3. And if we had more projects, they'd go down the list, all the way down through 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever. We would only be able to fund fully those projects down to where the money ran out.
Right.
This is a strange year. We only had 3 applications, and it was what the money was available to fund.
Yeah, and initially, we didn't have enough to fund the last project fully, but when the final numbers came out, it knocked us up a little, so we were able to fund all three.
So we'll do this
every year.
That is exciting. That's good news. Did anyone have any quick questions on that matter?
You want to cover the conflict of interest?
Yeah.
The new item that we have to do.
So right after that, we'll see a letter or a statement that needs to be signed. HUD has implemented a conflict of interest form that they want all members of the rating and ranking committee to sign. Basically saying that you, with the projects that were rated and ranked this year, that you do not have a conflict of interest, or if you do, just to state what that is.
This is part of the risk assessment for the state.
Right.
That's dealing with our city or more of the system. It's different, like we actually have different verbiage. Colleagues and I chart together with that.
Right.
And people who aren't here in person, what, are they emailed an electronic?
I've already got one back from both Commissioner Taylor and also from Curtis Barney. We electronically sent it to them. They took a picture of it and sent it back, or scanned it and sent it back. So we have theirs. I have them all pre-filled out for you with your name on here. We'll just need your signature and date before you leave today. Catch these for me.
So you don't have to worry about tearing it out yourself.
If you want to figure it out of there, just
so you don't want us to fill out the ones in our packet rip it out of our packet.
No, I've got them right here for you. They're coming around.
Is this deceiving?
Find your one with your name on it and then pass them along.
Okay. You don't have any conflicts with
that's only for voting members.
Or agriculture.
Maybe the cost of it.
Any that's questions it. About the projects?
No, just excited.
Yeah, we're very happy to be able to fund them all. Tropic Town actually had to do a survey and they qualified, so it's
that's great.
The application process for
yes, so I'm one for
what did we totally receive?
We received this year
1.51. When will this money fund?
1.88.
When will it fund?
They fund the contracts are signed on July 1st.
Okay.
And then they have a year on certain projects, a year and a half on others.
So we're able to put away like 30,000.
So that's a good question.
Or Chair, do you want to move on to that covers agenda item 7. The actual rating and ranking takes place by this board in agenda item 8. And so I'm going to pass around what the results of the scoring matrix was on those.
So
three grants.
We're going to segue into item 8, which will require a motion and a vote.
I'm going to pass this around that way. I'll take this one over here.
Wait, this is Tyler's.
Well, his name's said. You need to find yours. There's two there.
Oh. I got one.
That's broad.
Yeah, I do. Look.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, he's passing on that. You'll notice on the bottom there's 37,000 surplus left over. In our rating and ranking policy that you adopted, it states that we can take that money and use it as contingency in any construction projects that we have.
Oh, good.
So we'll split that money between the two construction projects and put it into their allocation for contingency.
So the bottom two.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
So at the end of the year, is there ever excess and you choose which project to go to this contingency for the construction
That just happened to happen this year. So we had a little bit of money left over. And most years we don't have money left over. But if we put it in a policy in case we do, we'll use that as contingency.
Yeah, if we didn't do that, then if we didn't have a way there for that to go to a project, it would go back to the state of Utah, and then other regions that would have a policy that said that excess funds to the state as a whole could go to their projects. We thought put it in contingency. If at the end of the project that is not needed for our contingency, it would still go back to the state of Utah, but it would be allocated to all the regions in next year's bigger pot.
So it's a good way to keep it in our area for sure.
Okay.
How did these get scored again?
This committee comes up with a rating and ranking policy, and there's 20 different criteria in that policy, which we would go over again in August.
We'll go over it in August.
Yeah, there's a lot of different. You can actually look at it on the state CDBGI website or handles on there. You can look that up and see what every criteria is. But it's based on.
So that's how the
LMI
fell in this order?
Yep. The one that he just handed out was the order that the rating and ranking came out as.
So in June, we will send out the rating and ranking. It's also on our website. It's also on the state CDBG website. That criteria we send out every June to everyone to say, if you have any suggestions for alterations in how we rate and rank projects, and we've got suggestions like, well, maybe you should give more points for this type of criteria or that on those 19 or 20 questions we have in there. Then in August, this board here, the steering committee, approves that rating and ranking criteria, and then we apply those projects to that criteria. And it's the intent of that was to make it a very objective, not a subjective process. Some of the other regions in the state of Utah had this thing where they would have a separate committee, separate than their steering committee or their equivalent of the governing board, and the applicants would come into that. They would have a scoring matrix sheet, and they would make their presentation, an actual presentation of the project, and then they would judge it on, like, well, how well was their project application prepared? How well did they present? Did they do this and that? And they do it on a sliding scale, like, I'll give them a 9 this time, just to get a 7 on this. And what would happen is, after you have 20 people come in, 20 different projects come in, by the time you're done, well, maybe I shouldn't have scored that first one so good, because these ones are much better than that, you know. And the state has encouraged this type of a criteria, where it's an established one, where if three of us in this room got together and did the scoring matrix, it would still come out to that same score. So it's not relative to who's reviewing it, it's the criteria that it's being matched to. So I could take any three steering committee members, and you would come up with the same score that we as staff did on there. And this is, for all the years I've been here and all the years this program's been in this region, it's used the rating and ranking criteria. This board does not want to be making the decisions. They want a criteria to make the decisions.
No, that makes good sense. Thank you for that explanation. Yeah.
And you'll be involved
understanding
in it this coming year. We've got a lot of new members, and so this is new to you.
Yeah. And if I'm understanding correctly, what we're just voting on is to basically ratify the scoring system for these particular projects.
Correct.
And then starting in June and August, we'll review the criteria for the next year's batch of asks. Is that correct?
You got it.
So with that, I will entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the ranking system for these three projects as presented.
Second.
All right. And now I'll call for a vote.
Aye.
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 All right, any opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to agenda number 9, discussion and consideration by the steering committee in their role as the CDBG Regional Review Committee of funding for an Iron County project under the CDBG emergency funding criteria. That's Cody and Gary, and I imagine you'll have something to say. Okay, we've got 10 minutes for this one, and it does require a motion and a vote at the end.
So we received an emergency application from Newcastle Fire under Iron County for a fire truck, because the one that they currently have is unusable. So it leaves the area without fire protection.
fire truck as soon as they can get one. So what that does is that money that would pay for that would come off the top of next year's allocation. So that 900 to a million, 900,000 to a million that we get next year would be reduced by 350,000 for the rest of the region.
And it's my understanding that they can, they have one, they could buy one right now. It's not like a waiting list.
Yeah, they have stock trucks available within 3 to 5 months. Mm-hmm. But they can spend the money now and have that delivered. So my initial concern with this was, can they spend the money as an emergency? Yes. But they can. I've been assured that they can spend it quickly and get that truck here.
When this was presented to me, my first initial reaction was, and until it was clarified by Commissioner Cousins to me today here prior to the meeting, it has to be something that can be immediately addressed. And what was initially presented was that it was going to be 2 years out. That would be a hard case to make for that. But if they can buy a stock truck and get it here very soon. This would be only the second time in the 29 years I've been here that CDBG has been used for emergencies. CID has been used for that, such as when we had the flood in Ildel. They received over, I think, $1.5 million grant within 3 weeks of when the flood happened. They were in front of the CID board and got a grant to replace their culvert and have washed out where their 14 people were killed in that. Enix City had a water tank, the large water tank you see when you go past there on the freeway. They were doing routine, they went in and did some tests in there with a diver and found out that the supports were totally rusted out at the bottom. They were afraid it was going to collapse. And if they did, they would have no fire protection and no water. So they came in for a CDBG emergency request. And they got a pump for, I think it was around $50,000, that they could immediately get trucked in to put onto a well that the city had that did not have a pump in it, that they could pressurize the water into the city system if that tank was to fail. That's the closest we had to an emergency. That was done through that. That $50,000 came off the top of the allocation the following year. The money is coming from money that hasn't yet been spent by CDBG this year, or money that has been returned to them from projects that did not use all of their funding that they had. So there is funding to do this, but the decision is up to this board. You're taking this off next year's allocation, so you just have to do it with that knowledge that this isn't new money. It's money that will come out of our region's allocation next year, so it will reduce our allocation next year by that amount, because we'll have that at the top of the ranking thing as funding repayment to the state for this emergency allocation. So I've been satisfied on here. I wasn't initially until the better explanation came in. But this will be up to this board on how you want to proceed with this.
Part of the problem, last year, they were going to apply for this, but we were building the fire station in Newcastle with CDBG funding. And because we hadn't spent 50% of the money, we couldn't apply for it. We had material delays. Looks like Washington County can't get air conditioners for their new receiving center. We couldn't get garage doors. We couldn't get electrical panels. And so it held us up, so we couldn't apply for last year, so it's delayed us to this year, so it's been a mess. But we've got a fire truck out there that's got a cracked frame. The electrical's burned up in it. It's just, they don't have a good engine to service that valley, which would also help Washington County in the enterprise.
Yep. Immediately. So you're saying something on the fire truck burned up?
Yes.
You know, that's not a good sign.
Fire truck. I'd like to make a motion that we approve the emergency request from the CDBG funds for Hackney County project, the fire truck, as described in the notes, noticing the matching funds that Iron County is putting up.
350 something.
Okay, I have a motion and a second, and I'm calling now for discussion. Does anyone have any discussion?
I just thought that it was a Washington County and a Washington County that did the motion in the second. So I like the idea that it will help enterprise too. And yeah. When I looked and I saw the matching funds or what you were going to add to it, planned emergency. It wasn't, they've been waiting 7 years. The frame broke, right? Sometimes people just keep waiting.
And honestly, that's what's happening in a lot of these old fire districts, is they have these old engines, and they got cracked frames. The firemen are going out to the emergency, the frame breaks and kills firemen. That's the challenge.
Bert, I appreciate you saying that, because we have had, over the years, a number of pre-planned, saying, we knew about this 5 or 6 years ago, but now it's an emergency because somebody said, oh, well, this is a pot of money we could go to. And HUD actually has a very strict requirement that you cannot have known about this problem more than 2 years. If it happened and you knew about, like, your water tank was falling off the mountain up here, but you knew about it 6 or 7 years ago, and you had a study done, and now all of a sudden you say it's an emergency, when back then it said it was an emergency, but you waited 6 years, so.
Yeah, I was just waiting for, I love that Paul explained what it was. It just made, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if any further discussion? Then I'll call for a motion. I mean, that's, I didn't mean to say that. Vente, I'll call for a vote.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right.
Thank you, everyone. That's
thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Motion carries. Now, for congressional staff updates, we're looking at 15 minutes, which looks like about 3 minutes.
Don't all speak at once.
Lorraine, are you not on this committee anymore?
Now you're Burke's on the committee.
Yes, I see Burke, and so I'm just saying now you're going to be.
Okay. You're switching around.
There you go. Keith?
All right. More than 2 months into the congressional session here, and the Senate is finally doing something other than processing nominations. Energy and Natural Resources Committee will hold their first hearing of the Congress tomorrow. They'll be examining issues surrounding the nuclear fuel cycle. Senator Lee is going to be highlighting the need for more production of our domestic uranium and the sheer lunacy of federal mineral withdrawals, which prevent us from processing our own uranium and keep us reliant on unfriendly nations like Russia. So that'll be the focus of his statements and questions tomorrow at that hearing. Senator Lee's also introduced a few pieces of legislation since we met last. One of them is called the Free Bird Act. So the U.S. is one of the only nations that still has a vaccine, COVID vaccine requirement for non-immigrant, non-citizen travelers to the U.S. is having a severe negative effect on Utah's businesses who do work outside of the country. President Biden's acknowledged the pandemic is over, so there's really no reason why we should still be requiring people to get vaccines into our country. So that bill would eliminate that mandate. Senator Lee and Senator Grassley also reintroduced their balanced budget amendment, which they reintroduce every Congress, would require the federal government balances its budget and not spend more than it brings in. Crazy, right? Another bill that Senator Lee sponsored, who's the lead sponsor with 44 other co-sponsors, is the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. So basically, if in your home state you're allowed to have a concealed weapon, you have those privileges, any other state that also allows concealed carry will reciprocate that right or that privilege. So we're kind of trying to make it like a driver's license. If you're licensed to drive in one state, it means you're licensed to drive in another state. We want to make that apply to concealed carry licenses as well. And the last thing locally, the Cedar City BLM field office announced they're going to be making some changes to the fee schedule at certain recreation sites in Iron and Beaver counties. And I reached out to both of those counties and they say they are on board with those. So if there are any questions or concerns, we're here to help with that. It sounds like you guys have vetted that. It's all good. Is that under 3 minutes?
Perfect. Okay. I do have questions about if anything can be done about the ozone transfer laws, but we can talk later about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go first. Sure. Okay. If you could just say, I'm Cindy Bullock, and I am the rural director for Congressman Chris Stewart, and work in conjunction with Lorraine thing. So we will do this, the two of us. Congressman Stewart is on, as I told you last time, a couple of different committees, a lot to do with defense, and that is taking a lot of his time and travel. He did get that with Representative Case. Many of you have been involved with that 5 and 6 county legislative ride that we do. Representative Case came, who's from Hawaii, a couple of years ago, and went on that ride, and has it's been a really good partnership. They've co-sponsored bills, worked in a number of things. So the congressman now went to Hawaii to look at some of the, especially natural resources, and some of the issues that they have in Hawaii. And it's interesting how similar, even though they're on an island and we have millions of acres, how the some of the issues that they're living with are the same. So kudos to 5 and 6 counties. It's just nice to see that that actually is making difference for specific legislation and things on the ground. We have co-sponsored 5 bills since that ride, and worked on a number of different things besides just the specific bills. Additionally, we are just getting ready for appropriations. Many of you have submitted or are in the process of submitting for community project funding. Those of you who are interested, we're having a little Zoom meeting at 3 o'clock. Assuming this meeting gets done in time, you're welcome to jump on. But if you have questions, reach out to Lorraine and I. Those applications are now live, and you can submit anytime between now and March 15th. In addition to the appropriations and community project funding, we are looking at a bill to defund the monument. Jerry, I hope you're still on.
We're here for it.
So it's a heavy lift, and we don't want to, you know, I need to manage expectations, but we are going to look at that and hope that we can use the pressure of the purse to get them off, you know, to show them how important it is and that we can just defund that. We've also co-sponsored a bill on the COVID-19 Origins Act. I mean, we all kind of know where COVID-19 came from, but we want the administration to declassify the funds and admit that it came from the Hunan lab. And Congressman Stewart is also working on his bill to ban social media for children under the age of 16. After his 988 and suicide work on mental health, it has become evident to him how much the social media is making an impact on our kids. And he's said a number of times, you know, he's getting a lot of pushback. You know, it's the kids want it, it's freedom. And he says, you know, but we make our kids go in car seats. We make them put on seat belts. This is no different. We are trying to protect our kids. So that's the highlight for me and Lorraine. Unless you have questions for me before Lorraine.
Okay. So Washington County for Congressman Stewart. And Cindy's touched on most everything, which is great. He is co-sponsoring a bill, H.R. 364, that's a day like that, that I'm all in favor for, would allow states to observe daylight savings time year-round. Some states already choose to observe standard time, but this would give us... I hate daylight savings time, so I'm all for that. They're still working on the Search and Rescue Act that would benefit the rural counties, and that's awesome. I'm excited to see that we're getting quite a few people interested in our community project funding. And like Cindy said, that's coming right up. We need to know that we were hoping to get a few more of them, the availability to get more, but we're only going to get 15 out of his office this year again. But we're working with the police, with the sheriff's office. They're trying to join those things regionally to get a bigger ask. We which is really great, and that's what we're wanting to happen. So those are working, and yes, get on. And if you've got any questions, be sure to ask in here. We're here for you.
Tell me about the search and rescue. Can you tell me what
the search and rescue one?
Yes. So what's the statute?
It is one where they're putting a bill in to get assistance for search and rescue in rural areas that have a large. And if I'm saying this wrong, Cindy, this is your area, a large land area, and not enough money to run their search and rescue.
So it's smaller population and larger land mass. Yeah. Generally, bills and money is often based on, you know, population. So everything goes to the Wasatch Front. Well, if you're
Esplanade,
and you have a very small population, but this huge mass of land, and it's your people who are going out to pull people off of the monument, your whole budget is gone in one rescue. So it's specifically right now for equipment only, but we're just trying to kind of get the camel's nose in the tent, so to speak, to see what we can do.
Well,
so
we appreciate that.
It's for, it's based on that, and I don't know if they've got it tiered to counties, if it's like fourth, fifth, and sixth counties, or with the federal government. I know it's just based on the population versus the land mass.
So with my understanding, Congressman Stewart is co-sponsoring or
he is sponsoring this bill.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we've just reintroduced that since we started this, so weeks, month.
Best of luck.
Yeah.
And he is co-sponsoring another one, Prohibition of Agricultural Land for the People's Republic of China Act, to keep them from buying our ag land, which I'm all in favor for that.
Sure. I'm Taylor Stevenson, and I'm with my colleague Shannon King. We're here on behalf of the Gateway for Accelerated Innovation in Nuclear, which is a Department of Energy initiative that's housed in Idaho National Laboratory. There is a contest. If you can repeat that 10 times fast without screwing up, you can set the same amounts. Normally, I'm like the only person who talks about nuclear, so it's a little interesting. I'm following up another nuclear act. But Shannon and I are actually going through talking to the state and local policymakers. Folks in economic
development. Is this a congressional staff update?
No, but you just pointed at me. I figured I didn't want to lurk in the back of the room.
I just looked at you.
It's a future congressional.
Yeah. There you go. So just real quickly, we're a federal program that's just offering resources and access to the national labs for folks who are talking about nuclear energy. So we're meeting with folks throughout this area and working our way up to Salt Lake City. So just want to let you guys know who we are.
So you work with a company that's a private company?
Federal program.
A federal program.
Yep.
Okay.
With the Idaho National Lab?
Yes, ma'am.
We're hoping that the New Scale program comes to you and works.
We're happy to talk about nuclear, but I don't want to take up any of that time.
We're hoping it works.
Okay. Very good. Do we have any state agencies to report?
Unless somebody's online, I don't know.
Gary, are there anybody from a state agency here to report?
No.
Okay. Universities and technical colleges update, and it shows 20 minutes. That seems like maybe we don't need that much, but.
Well, we have four now that are invited, the two universities and the two colleges, Dixie Tech and Southwest, are all invited, so we figured, well, 5 minutes sometimes, that's really condensed for each of those. So.
Okay, very good. Who wants to go first?
I think Kennedy's the only one here.
And I'll try to keep it to 2 minutes instead of
2.0.
All right. Like I said, my name is Henry Walden. I'm representing Utah Tech University. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to share some updates from the legislative session, some wins that the university received. I wish our legislators were here so I could thank them publicly, but it sounds like they'll be here next meeting. So let me just run through some of these items that were funded by the legislature. The legislature funded a project so that the university can purchase a fire station that's adjacent to our campus that's currently owned by the city of St. George.
will be able to, once the city relocates, use that facility for outdoor recreation programs and to store several of our community outreach buses. We also funded the Digital Forensics Crime Lab. The state funded some additional funding for that lab. Interestingly, that lab has serviced 60% of all police and sheriff's departments in the state. And what they do is they perfected a technology they call a chip-off, which allows them to jailbreak or break into locked laptops and iPhones and other technological devices. So some funding was awarded there. We received funding for our STEM outreach programs, which are designed to ensure that students are engaging in the STEM fields at a young age and can get into those careers. We received funding for a really innovative program that we're calling Innovation Labs, which is a partnership with state agencies. This was in the governor's budget, and what it allows the university to do is partner with different state agencies to innovate and save money through a variety of different projects, modernizing software and different programs like that. So we're excited about that program. It's an active learning opportunity for our students to work with different state agencies. And then last but not least, the Performing Arts Center of Southern Utah requested funding for a renovation of the Cox Auditorium, which is on the university's campus, and the legislature funded that renovation, so we're excited about that opportunity. Last but not least, I want to just mention, on April 14th, the university is hosting a ribbon cutting for the Center for Precision and Functional Genomics. Congressman Chris Stewart will be one of our featured guests, and we're really excited about this Center for Precision and Functional Genomics. It will house a variety of different programs, one of them being the Variant Science Training Program, which was funded in a community project funding request with the help of Congressman Stewart's office last fiscal year. This is a program designed to train genomic specialists who will work in places like Intermountain Healthcare with precision genomics. So we're really excited about everything going on at the university. We're focused on meeting the needs of the workforce in our region, and thank you for having me. I'm open to any questions.
That was fantastic. If there aren't any questions for you, then maybe we could give, we're ahead of schedule a little bit, maybe we could give you a little bit more time than just blurting out one sentence?
Sure. I don't really have a prepared presentation, but I can just give you a quick 20-second spiel on what GAIN is and why we're out here in Utah. Actually, I've been going around to a lot of rural areas. I'm from northern Minnesota, so I think they kind of just sent me out because I speak in a Minnesota accent. But what we've been finding is folks, you know, again, I'm not the only person talking about nuclear. It's kind of a popular trend now. People have a lot of questions, and if you're like me, I grew up thinking of nuclear like The Simpsons, right? You know, 55-gallon drum of green blanket, right? That doesn't exactly work for a lot of state and local folks when it comes to making kind of clear-eyed energy planning and energy transition decisions. So, like, I've been in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Montana and Colorado in the last month and a half, and we're hearing the kind of the same thing from a lot of these particularly coal communities and communities that are kind of looking ahead saying, how are we going to make it to 2050? They're all saying, what's next? What's the next step? And so we're also hearing people are saying, we're using Google as our main method of research. We think we can do a little bit better than that. And that's where the federal government has kind of put aside some resources to do outreach and get folks directly connected to the national lab resources and subject matter experts, not just at Idaho National Lab. What's nice about GAIN is that it works across all the national labs. So whatever your question is, we can kind of pair you with a subject matter expert. And let me just be clear about that. We're not going to just hand you a government report. In fact, you know, if you have a government report that you find and you just don't want to read, give us a call. We'll find the person who wrote the report or is the subject matter expert on the report and have them answer any questions you guys have. We understand it's a pretty complicated topic. I am not a nuclear engineer. I have a degree in philosophy. Right, I've just hung around with a lot of nuclear engineers for the last few years, and so fortunately I can kind of speak the lingo a little bit, and I'm trying to help connect folks who are making kind of critical decisions and talking about the future of their economies, which is keying in on what the energy conversation was during the presentation. That's what GAIN is about, is kind of connecting you to those resources. So that's a little bit more than 20 seconds, but hopefully kind of places why we're here.
Thank you. Okay, great. And what do you think of the idea, y'all, if you were to give your information to Brian and then they were to distribute?
Hey, Brian, thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, good. I don't think that's happened yet, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay, good.
I just met him right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that'd be a good way to go about it.
Can you answer a couple of nuts and bolts questions?
Sure.
Typically, nuclear needs a lot of water.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of water, but I'm of the understanding small nuclear does not.
Typically, so, and there's a couple workarounds there. So, carbon-free power project is mentioned with NuScale. They're doing that up in Idaho, which is also a desert. And so they're using what's called dry cooling or air cooling for that. And you lose a little bit of efficiency, but they figure they can kind of make that up with the economics of scale, right? Which, you know, we're still talking about a 500 megawatt project. It's a fairly large, you know, power plant. Some of the other reactor designs, and this is where, you know, this is kind of your quick, you know, what's new with advanced reactors. You know, typically, and this is the really corny joke I make, you know, the conventional reactors, the ones that you see right now, like Palo Verde down, you know, they just turned Vogel on in Georgia, and the ones that were made, built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's kind of like a Henry Ford, you know, if, you know, you can have your favorite color of Model T as long as it's black, right? Because, you know, we're kind of done with the large, you know, one-size-fits-all lights, you know, light water reactor. You know, if there are light water reactors like NuScale, and there are other companies like GE has a 300 megawatt version, those are being built in more modular fashion, right? So think more like a Boeing airplane built in a hangar and then trucked out to a location and propped up. And some of the even smaller ones or different advanced reactors are being used for different purposes. So, for example, GAIN just awarded a voucher, which if you have any questions about the voucher program, let me know. But they just awarded a voucher program last quarter to Dow Chemical, who's working with a company called X Energy out of Maryland. They have what's called a high temperature gas reactor, right? I can explain a little bit of what that is, but bottom line is that reactor is using helium as a coolant, and they're able to get to higher industrial temperatures. So Dow is thinking they can maybe decarbonize some of their industrial processes using nuclear heat as opposed to, you know, chemical heat through natural gas. So that kind of, a lot of those designs don't use as much water. Again, they're using like helium gas as a coolant or maybe a molten salt as a coolant as opposed to water. So you're going to see with a lot of the designs, not all of them, but a lot of the designs, a pretty reduced water intake and profile.
So does this satisfy the anti-everything energy group?
That group will never be satisfied. Right? I'll be honest about that. But, you know, again, and that's one of the things I love about my job is I don't have a reactor to sell. You could try to give me $20. I don't have anything for you. All I've got is good technical science and smart people who know how to answer questions a lot better than I do. But the bottom line is, I don't really think that there's going to be a silver bullet, right? Again, I'm from Minnesota. We believe in the golden buckshot, right? There's going to have to be, I think, a lot of math and a lot of dollars and cents that are figured out to figure out what the right energy mix is to make sure that people still have jobs. I mean, we've got workforce that are going to have to transition. You hear a lot of folks talk about reducing baseload power, and again, you guys don't know where I'm from or who I am, but I come from a town where my mom grew up on Mill Avenue. My grandpa worked at the paper mill. Paper mill closed in 1995, right? I get workforce transition, what that means, and I also get what a town, you know, that depends on a tourist economy is a lot like. That's where I'm from, right? So, you know, for me, it's a lot about doing the math and making some hard decisions. And when people are talking about, you know, we're going to need half the baseload power, I'm like, okay, which half of the communities that are providing baseload power are you putting on an ice flow and setting out? So, again, I think people make smart decisions when they have good information, so we're trying to offer that.
So the wokeites are attacking Utah in particular.
Okay.
So if we can go a step ahead of them, okay. If we can get a step ahead of them, and when they come in to raid us and there's no treasure, then we laugh at them as they leave. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Why can't we move ahead?
So let me translate that a little bit into Minnesota talk, because we just speak fluent, passive aggressive. Not lying. I'm lying, I'm dying. But no, I mean, the way I look at it is, again, it's about taking the politics out of the conversation and what it like, right? Like, what's weird about nuclear is, you know, despite it being kind of like, you know, people say, well, that's a nuclear topic. Nuclear, for whatever reason, Republicans and Democrats can both talk about, because it's got that base load, it's got the jobs, it's got clean energy components, and so there's a lot of middle ground. I don't know, it's, you know, strange bedfellows, right? But that's where I think, when you bring the national labs in, and that's where I will kind of stand up and kind of beat my chest for my coworkers and my clients here. The national labs do have that kind of gravitas of, this is unimpeachable science. These are some of the smartest people in the world. They're also some of the kindest people in the world. You can get some of the best hiking routes in Idaho and Wyoming from folks in Idaho National Lab. But they're really, you know, they answer things in a human way and they can put things in context. And I think that that's a lot of what people are looking for, not just in nuclear or energy conversations. I think that that's pretty broadly in every conversation. People are looking for just the facts and how to make good decisions. So
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, and if anyone wants to speak with you afterwards.
Absolutely.
And with that, I'll call for a motion. Well, actually, you know what? Chair is prerogative. Meeting is adjourned at?
You have all the power.
Down. 2:51 p.m.
There you go.
Thank you so much, you all.
If anyone here, if you're a part of UAMPS, I would encourage you to look at the new scale. Hurricane City is, like, we have 20 megawatts now. Washington has 17 or 18 megawatts that they purchased into it. Hurricane City, like, 15. But out of this 500 megawatt project, is the nuclear reactors that they're going to have there. It requires three people to work at the lab. It requires, I mean, when he's talking about minimal...